Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is December. What's this? This is the 12th, right?
Today is the
12th,
yes.
Yeah. I somehow knew that. I don't even know how.
Nigga, it took you 45 seconds to know.
I did. It wasn't like I pulled it right up. You know what I'm saying? How's everybody doing?
I'm cold.
Yeah, it's free. Got brick outside. Like, it was cold, but it got, like, tonight it dropped down crazy. It's not a game, man. I think it's going to be I sound like an old black man, but I do
it's
think
gonna it's going to be a cold winter.
Yeah, brutal one.
Maybe I mean, your bones is telling you?
Yeah, my bones.
Your joints?
My bones is telling me, my knees is telling me it's going to be a cold one this year, Jimmy.
We haven't had a really bad one. Like, we've had some moments, but we haven't had a really bad winter in a while.
Yeah, I got a feeling since Trump's in office, everything else is fucked up. So why not be a bad winter too?
Then we just had a winter with a couple blizzards.
Yeah, but it was like, whole season.
That's y'all in New York City, my nigga. Like,
out there.
The city snowfall be a little bit different.
Than Jersey. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, man. And like Long Island and parts of Queens.
Long Island gets bombed out, yeah.
Yeah, man. Right. Like, you know, you guys got the buildings. Right? And there's always people walking, so the snow never really tracks into to some degree.
Yeah, that happens even from uptown to midtown. Like, you'll be uptown and be like, oh shit, it's nasty out here. You get to midtown, it's whatever.
Yeah. Walking and all that.
Wait, Sean, you're a little low.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
So I went to see SZA last night.
Oh yeah, I saw that on your Insta.
She was good. She was really good. I enjoyed her. She had a good show, tight band. Sound great live. Piece to Raven Simone, who's a little girl we got signed to Atlantic. She's the opening act for the tour.
Did you say Raven Simone?
Yeah, you know her?
Nigga, did you just say that like...
Nigga, Raven Simone is Raven Simone.
Oh, no, Raven Lene. You know what I mean, goddammit.
I'm talking about, yeah, you know her? What?
Raven Lene. You know them two, the shit, they're all the same, goddammit. Raven.
Nigga, I thought this old black nigga here was getting ready to go down memory lane talking about when Raven Simone had a deal.
With the Cheetah Girls.
Yes. Yeah.
No, shit.
Talking about Olivia.
Raven Lynette. Excuse me, Raven Simone and Raven Lynette. Raven Lynette, she's a little 16-year-old girl from Chicago. Well, she's 18 now. She was 16 when she signed. So she's doing the whole tour with SZA. So peace to her. She did a great job. So now this one, you know, mentioned it was nice to go see SZA. I went to see Daniel Caesar a couple weeks ago. So
that's
my new little thing, man. Like going to see some of these shows. I hadn't really been doing shows too much lately.
You haven't? Okay.
No, I mean, in the last year or so, I hadn't been to a lot of shows.
Okay.
Not that I can remember anyway. So I wanted to kind of see a few shows. I'm supposed to go see Lil Uzi Vert this weekend. I think Monday. So I'm supposed to see a few shows for the end of the year, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but if you get a chance to go see SZA, I say go see her. It's a good night out with friends and family. Yeah. How'd y'all do last over the weekend and with the snow?
You talking to Sean. Okay.
I talked to both of y'all.
Wasn't bad. It didn't stick here.
It's stuck up here.
Well, nah, it's stuck for me, but I usually I'll go out, I check the weather on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
If I know I got maybe another 2 or 3 hours of snowfall, I'll head out and shovel while it's warm still, while it's still humid, before it freezes. I shoveled, I laid down salt, and within like 15, 20 minutes, man, my driveway and my walk, you know, the side street was cleared, clean.
It was good.
Got me a little workout in.
Okay, yeah, got your little sweat on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it didn't stick with you, Nye?
Nah, I mean, it was slushy and nasty, and actually, the crew, the girls, we did our annual, like, Christmas fellowship that night.
At the house, or did y'all go out?
Huh? No, we went out.
Okay.
We went to a restaurant down in, I guess, West Village area. But it wasn't awful. Like, it was, again, the most annoying thing was that it was slushy and just a little icy, but it wasn't really bad. And it was all gone the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. The next day it was kind of cleared up.
Yeah.
Wait, what I had to say some other shit that happened over the week. Daggone it. Damn, something happened. I can't remember. It'll come back to me.
Okay.
It was something good too. Shit. Oh, on the snow day, Sunday, Saturday rather, I stayed in the house. I watched that movie Coco.
What movie is that?
It's an animated movie about the Mexican boy.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to say it was really good. It's a Pixar film. And, you know, it's based in Mexico, but they're speaking English. It's like a couple little Spanish words are basically English. But it's a really good movie.
Wait a minute. You went to the movies? No.
I watched it on a little website on the computer.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's all about, like, I guess in Mexico they have, I forget the name of the day, but they have a day mm-hmm. where they celebrate the dead, and they have a thing where you have to have everybody's, all your dead family's pictures up, you know, throughout the year. And then the rule or whatever goes that as long as you have the pictures up on that day of the dead, your relatives can come visit you.
Okay.
Afterlife and stuff. Okay. You know, the picture up, then that means that you kind of forgotten and you can't come back. So it was based all on the tradition of that. It was like with most Pixar films, you could tell mm-hmm. they did their homework about the tradition and, you know, getting it right and getting, you know, everything. They nailed everything. It was good. I just want to say it was a really good, it was a good movie. If you're home watching it, you should home doing nothing. check it out.
Nigga, you need a hottie toddy.
I said that. I told him he might have the walking pneumonia. This nigga.
I need a hot toddy for that lady down at the bar in Atlanta again. I forget her name. I think her name was Miss Rose or something like that.
Jeffrey needs some tussin, some something.
I need some.
He's for that.
Some ginger to lay down and
quit. I'm good. I'm good as long as I don't talk.
Get some Vicks and rub it on your chest.
I got to do some. I got some Vicks. I'm going to do that tonight.
Get some Buckleys.
Y'all niggas got to talk more on this one because I can't talk. I keep getting
caught. Get some what? Do you have water near you? Like, for real?
Yeah, I got some. Yeah, let me go get some water while y'all go on and talk while I need some water.
Oh, Lord Jesus. What are we going to talk about? Let me see. What can I talk about while Jeffrey is gone.
I got my water now. Let's see.
Okay.
I was drinking,
you got the topics.
I was drinking tangerine juice from Whole Foods. I was trying to be fancy.
You know what?
That's what was jamming me up.
Yeah, don't be doing holistic remedies when you, like, you could do holistic remedies when you're trying not to get sick. When you are already sick, it is time to call in the tried and trusted and true. Right.
Well, I'm drinking the water. I'm drinking my
alkaline. Cold pressed, hand squeezed, gluten free tangerine. No, that's not
100% tangerine juice. Purely delicious.
No.
Yeah, it wasn't working. So I'm drinking my water now. My alkaline water from the Whole Food. All right, I'm back. Let's talk some TV.
Okay.
Let's start off with Black King. I watched actually. Black King Chicago for the first time this week. I'm way behind.
For the season finale.
Oh, that was, I didn't realize that was a finale. Okay.
That was
I didn't enjoy it.
The whole season has been about The whole entire season has been about Ryan fighting for control of the shop with the rest of the staff Ryan and Kat. That's been Kat's whole storyline, has been this Ryan shit, which is why it was funny to me while she sat at the table and was like, I don't need your dude for a storyline. That was your only storyline, Kat. Literally, that was it.
She got out of the shop, right? She had moved on, right?
She left the shop on her own volition. That's what killed me when Kat kept, when everybody was like, but Kat is day one, not mad, but bitch, you left. Like, Ryan was mad at you because you left. And we were actually defending your ass, like, Ryan ain't have, you know, like, you ain't owe nothing to not mad. And now because LA did not work out for you, you feel like you're able to come back and do whatever.
And come back and just, like, take your spot like you never left.
Right. And I mean, behind the scenes, there's been a bunch of stuff. Like, Ryan first went on a rant one day and suggested that he quit. And then he was like, nah, I was just talking shit. And he was also like, while we're filming, they don't really work for me. They work for the production company. Cause everybody all season has been like, yo, how are they so disrespectful to you? How they act like this ain't your shit? So I guess, you know, that's been the conflict. He's like, the production company takes over the lease for Non-Mag while they're shooting. This is what Ryan said. This is just what he said. He said the production company takes over the lease, and Sean, you may know if this sounds right. He said the production company takes over the lease for Non-Mag while they're shooting. So technically, while they're shooting, Non-Mag, the actual location does not belong to him, and his employees, like, everybody works for whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds very feasible. Someone's moving. I think that's you,
yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a very feasible explanation, because this season I was kind of like, this is feeling really weird that he doesn't really have the authority to just simply change a lock and tell him to get the fuck out. Like,
right. He actually did change the lock, and Van came and broke the motherfucking window. Like, that was insane.
And I think that, I mean, listen, for production reasons, that sort of makes sense, because they are filming at that location. They're probably using that location for hours out of the day. You can't have regular business in there, right? So your argument would be that, hey, you guys have to supplement this lease. I can't run and operate a business in here. And it's probably best that they do that just for insurance purposes. I'm sure the production company has to have a certain level of liability insurance when they have those gatherings and those parties.
Right, right.
Which I always think is just weird, because there's so much alcohol. People are getting in and out of cars. But look, I'm not, you know, far be it from me to talk about how somebody else runs their production. But that's a very feasible thing.
Okay.
So I think what happened... Ryan has definitely been unhappy with this season. He also went on a rant that he later deleted about how when he set out to do the show, he wanted to paint Chicago in a positive light, and he felt like he let Chicago down and that they were perpetuating like a lot of coonery and stereotypes. Like he posted a picture of like something Chance did with the Obama Foundation. And he was like, yo, I didn't even know about this, and this is in my city. Just this proves how far away I am from what I need to be doing. And I'm sorry to everybody for what Non-Mag became. And I think what happened is Ryan's not the star of the show. Like,
who's the star in your eyes?
Huh? Well, here's the thing. Ryan should be the star of the show, but Charmaine and her antics, like basically the whole rest of the staff has overshadowed Ryan, because they're so fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, because of coonery.
They're so turnt, you know. They're about this. Like, they're trying to bring entertainment, and Ryan is still trying to kind of, like, control his narrative, and the rest of them are like, fuck it, we out here. And it just really causes, you can just see how far apart they are. Like, you can see how often Ryan is really trying to make sure the cameras don't catch him slipping, and everybody else, especially Charmaine, is like, ow, turn, yeah, you know,
every,
whatever.
Every scene.
Every scene.
Ryan, man, you know, look, God bless him. Ryan is a couple of things, in my opinion. He's not the type of dude that's cut for the sort of behavior that he's exhibiting with his women.
Right.
He's just not that kind of guy. Like, you can see that it fucks with him, it bothers him. He doesn't really handle the confrontation well at all. And I get it. He wanted to paint Chicago in a certain light and all of that shit, man. But, like, you knew what this was when you signed up, my nigga. Like, this, this, you signed up to a franchise that was based in New York. Like, don't tell me you didn't know what you were walking into.
Yeah.
Like, and
I think they thought they were going to be different, you know? And at first, they kind of were, but,
He's sour that shit didn't go his way.
Yeah.
He's sour that shit didn't go this way. And this is, this happens more often when you see people feel like, oh, I wanted everyone to think I was this. It's really a microcosm of how he's treated his relationship. I wanted everybody to think I was this real upstanding dude trying to keep my family together, right? But right. I'm actually eating ass in the bathroom, right? Yeah. Like that's, I mean, that's just what it was. And I'm not mad and I'm not judging him. Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know his plight. I don't know his life. Right. So I'm not using that as a platform to say he's a bad dude. He just ain't cut for what he's trying to play. And, you know, the thing about reality, man, is the cameras catch what they catch.
Yeah.
The cameras can't play nothing you didn't do.
Right. True. And he's out here popping off on him and his girl out here popping off on producers and doing all that other stuff. Like, but on the flip side, I will say.
This is good. I was with Jeremiah before.
Huh?
This is good. I left him for Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he made him. But what I will say is that as much as Ryan got caught, you know, with his proverbial hand in the cookie jar, Kat is definitely about blowing up spots. And I don't know what she really gets out of it. Like, Forrest sent her flowers to apologize. She sent the flowers and Forrest card to Forrest girl instead of, like, confronting Forrest.
Attention.
The girl rolling up and causing a scene, and Kat is all like, well, she needed to know, and da-da-da. So then with Ryan, instead of confronting Ryan directly, which she had not really done at all, she decides she needs to go talk to his girl while they're all together on a fucking island, and then decides she needs to bring it up again. And even a little thing like Charmaine, like, she was like, Charmaine tried to get at me once, too. Like, but Kat, like, what? Why? You know what I mean? I'm just kind of like it's cool.
Because it paints her. She is quintessentially, honestly, Jeff pegged her from early on, which was she's, you know, she's been gassed a lot during her life that she was, she was the shit. And you can see that when she is not the center of attention, when she's not focused, she doesn't know how to receive that. She doesn't know how to be a part of the group without being the vixen using
right.
the hot agent, whatever she is.
She's not that fly. Like, I really don't get it.
Not fly at all. I've been saying that she's not hot, but she's high yellow, and she's mixed with something. And for most Negroes, that's more than.
Like, her body ain't even that crazy. Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
You know, look, I mean, I understand. I can see why a dude would be attracted to her. I don't necessarily see why a dude would be jumping through rings of fire for her. But hey, who are me, right? I think that when you look at her behavior, there's a consistent pattern, which is a passive-aggressive approach at men, which is, I kind of want you, but I don't really want you. I want you to want me. She is... The thrill for her is the fact that you're chasing her. And when you are no longer chasing her, then this is not cool. This is not, you know, now she wants to, you know, be the upstanding woman now and go all Barbara, this is Shirley. You know what I'm saying? That ain't really the game you playing. Like, you know what I'm saying?
She did the same thing when Forrest started dating old girl. Like, she didn't want to claim for in public. She didn't want to really rock with Forrest like that. Like, he was all up her ass, and she was kind of playing up to the left. And when Ford brought old girl around, she flipped out. And it's like,
because he was no longer the puppy dog.
Yeah.
At 3 a.m. and say, yo, you know, bring me a two-piece.
Right.
And that's what. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that killed me with the Kat thing, and I don't want to belabor this too much, but this has been the whole storyline this whole season. At the end of it all, she's crying, talking about, you know, but I thought me and you were friends, and I never thought I would lose your friendship. If I'm your friend, then my nigga, come to me and talk to me about how you're feeling about whatever transpired between us. You don't skip over me and go to my girl. Cause what exactly are you trying to accomplish? Like, she was like, Ryan out here trying to make me decide. Nah, Ryan was letting you do whatever you were going to let Ryan do. All you had to really do was shut Ryan down. That's it.
Pretty much. That was it.
And that was really it.
You know,
Ryan wasn't, there was never any threat of Ryan leaving Rachel for you ever, ever. And I think that's what she knows. And that's what bothers her.
And a big part of that too was like, yo, you never even gave Ryan a chance to say, yo, man, you know, handle this, talk to your girl, figure this shit out.
Yeah.
If that's your friend.
Right. Because had she handled it that way in the first place, like, it never would have gotten to a point, it may have never gotten to a point where Ryan felt like they couldn't be in a shop together. The reason Ryan feels like they can't be in a shop together is because of what went down in DR. Primarily.
Yeah. At the lake house.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at the lake house. Well, at the lake house, but then how she handled it in Dominican Republic going straight to Rachel. So I was like, whatever. Jeff's internet is acting up, but we're going to stay on TV for a minute. Black Ink New York was back this week as well. It's kind of Black Ink New York / Black Ink Atlanta, which I don't know if that's ever going to become its own show because it's the New York cast. There's not really a new cast. But Caesar and Duchess are in Atlanta.
Caesar and Sky.
Caesar and Sky. I'm sorry. Caesar and Sky are in Atlanta on like some Laverne and Shirley shit, basically.
yeah, pretty much.
Like, literally, like skipping down fucking Peachtree, like Laverne and Shirley. Caesar's out here. He fucking anything moving. That's the plot line. The plot line for this first episode is Caesar's out here fucking anything moving. Sky feels like she's living large. You know, she knew money and shit.
And can I just say something? Look, I don't want to be pretentious.
Right.
That is not a mansion.
No.
It's not a mansion.
It's a mansion if you lived in a small apartment in New York.
But we got to get some perspective here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice home. It looks like a very nice neighborhood.
And it's very average for Atlanta. It's definitely by Atlanta standards, it's not even a McMansion.
That's like 3,500 square feet with a walkout basement. Nice home, not shitting, but it's not a mansion.
Right. So, you know, Sky walking around in robes with fur trim and, you know, all kinds of, like, cooking muffins in the morning and just doing all sorts of shit. So her and Caesar down there. Meanwhile, New York has kind of been left to their, the New York staff has been kind of left to their own devices to figure it out. One thing I'm seeing this season, I'm curious to get your take on it, Sean. It feels like they're trying to punch up the storylines a little bit. Like, it does, this first episode felt a little scripted to me. Like, it felt very constructed. Like, they wanted it to have some humor and some lightness and some this and some that, but it didn't feel like we were just picking up and catching them in the midst of life.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that is, that is by design. I mean, right. you know, I don't know how they shoot, but for the most part, you're going to have shot the majority of the show before you go into your first episode. So they kind of have an idea of what the season is going to be. And they know
work
that,
backwards.
Yes. And so they know that the first first three episodes are going to be very important in grabbing people's attention. So they kind of want to. That's why they do Atlanta immediately. We want to show you all of this craziness that's going on and all that. And so that's
fine. Jeff, we're talking about Black Ink New York season premiere.
Okay, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I had to put my shit through the hot spot. Something happened. But okay, good. Yeah.
But it's not uncommon for shows to do that, especially now. Not to sidetrack too much, but reality TV is really a big part of television now. It's no longer a niche, you know, thing. And so there's a bit of telenovela happening. I'm not saying that it's scripted, but yes, there is structure to shooting. This isn't the real world 1992.
Yeah, they just carry the camera around and shit. There's writers now, and it's a real thing.
Well, writers, I would be careful. Like,
writers. Not saying they make that they have lines, but they're kind of crafting. Crafty.
Let me say this, because I've seen people, not just you, Jeff, but I've seen other people say this before. And so people are not writing storylines, right? Like, the story is the story. The people who are weaving this together in a succinct way would be considered a writer. And again, I'm using air quotes, right?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But they're not writing the fact that Caesar was out fucking everybody, right? Like, that's not a myth. That's not
what he was doing.
That's what was happening. So you try to do it, and, you know, you try to show that in a much more lighthearted way, or in a funny way, or you know, break it open.
Yeah. So what did y'all think about the premiere?
Well, I was saying what Sean was speaking on was, I was saying that it felt first I said that Sky and Caesar was out in Atlanta, like Laverne and Shirley, just out there. And it felt
rented.
Well, I mean, the house I love rented, but I was just saying that their, like, this introduction to their life in Atlanta felt a little scripted or crafted to me. And I mean, I get it; they need to set everything up. But you know, Caesar's just out here, like, he's just, that nigga just out here, and I get it, like. When Atlanta is new to you, it's overwhelming. As a black man, every black man I know who started spending time in Atlanta for the first time ever was just overwhelmed. I get it.
He's a straight black man. He's got some discretionary income, and you know,
discretionary income.
Yeah, you know, he could pay. You know, put a little something on your Metro PCS bill.
Exactly.
Get little Larry.
Help you with your Georgia Power bill. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. What did y'all think about the storyline with Sky and her son, and Donna and her ex?
I think the storyline with Sky and her son, it makes me incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay.
It's way too serious a topic for a show with such non-serious bullshit. Like, I'm okay with the non-serious bullshit, but her going back into those kids' lives is a very real thing.
Yeah, because they're not, because that's the other thing. I think for because of the way she kind of talked about them, I think we've always been under the guise that, I speak for me, that they were, like, younger. Like, they were, like, you know, 9 and 11 or 12. Like, these are, like, men. These are,
well, crazy. Sky had those.
Sky was, like, 14 when she was
10. 13 and 14. But I don't know, but just the way she talks about them, like, I just had the thought process that they were not as old as they're not old, I'm saying, but not as old as they are. Like,
well, they're, like, they're teenagers, though, right? Like, I don't think they're 20-something. Yeah,
18 and 19, like,
they're late teenagers.
They're late.
I think when you talk about your kids, when you talk about kids and you haven't been active in their lives,
it's kind of like, in your mind, they're young.
They pause. But I mean, I saw a lot of comments online with people criticizing Sky for bringing her kids into her storyline this year.
Saying what?
Just, like, you know, it's wrong, it's exploitive, it's selfish, especially the one who clearly doesn't seem to want to fuck with her.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, we'll see how this continues.
Well,
I actually saw that interview that they showed. It was on, World Star or some shit, but, like...
Of course.
Yeah, but something like that, but actually, I saw the interview a few months ago, and what they don't show is... The guy, because, you know, Sky also, you know, initially kind of fudged it and made you think that she had both kids by one guy. But she actually is actually two guys.
Oh, and I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, there's two separate fathers. So there's the guy who came back to the shop that time, if you remember, and was mad aggressive. And then there's another guy. So the other guy is the guy who's this kid's dad. He's actually in that interview as well. They didn't show him. Maybe he didn't sign off or whatever.
Right.
I just want to, like, you know, get my story straight. And his, you know, forgive me if I'm not getting everything right, but his story basically was like, she had the kids when we were really young. He didn't dog her.
Right.
We were both really young. We had the kids. I was hustling. I ended up moving down south, I think to like North Carolina, something like that. North Carolina. He's like, I took him with me because it was too crazy in New York, and I raised him. And then over time, we just kind of lost touch, and she just never was around. But he wasn't being malicious about it. He was
so only one of. See, that's the other thing. I thought that both of her kids had been given up for adoption.
Yes, but from two different guys.
Right, but that's the thing. But she still made it seem like both her kids had been given up for adoption. You're saying that one of them was actually raised by his dad.
Yes, he's raised by his dad. His dad, because his dad was.
That's a whole different narrative.
That's why, if you remember in the show, he was like the kid was like, "Yo, that adoption thing is bullshit."
Right.
That's why he said that, because he's like,
and
"Yo,
she's coming like, oh, they're saying that adoption is not legal." Yeah, yes. So it's messy. It's messy.
Yes, exactly.
But you know what?
It's very messy.
And listen, even if that kid is of a certain
age. I'm not trying to dog this guy, by the way.
Yeah, no. Even if that kid is of a certain age and he can sign on to that and be a part of interviews like that, I just think it's bad, man. I just think it's in poor taste because it's still a young man who is
probably, he's sorting his feelings out.
Yeah, is navigating a space that is not some regular shit.
Yeah.
It's just not some regular shit, my nigga. That's not... You know, it's not like, yo, my pops wasn't around and there are like seven other friends or five other friends that have the same, you know, scenarios that you can kind of, you know, grow with and talk about and have and share those feelings. Like, not a lot of people could say, yo, not only was I put up for adoption, right? But like, I know who my mother is.
Yeah.
Right, I'm watching her
ass
every week.
I'm watching her on TV,
right? Like that's
acting
that's,
crazy too.
That's got to be a lot for a young man to take. I just think it was in. I just think as a parent, and I don't really give a fuck about, you know, what you do for your blogs and all of that shit. I just think it was over the line. It was out of line to interview that kid. It was out of line to me to have any of that on there. Listen. I said this before. I just feel like there are certain situations that are just not for the camera. Yeah. You know, I think it's awkward. I think it's uncomfortable. And I think it's unfair to put young people who are not really equipped to handle what comes with that, you know, because they think they're ready until their social media feed changes and, you know, people are talking about them. And you know what I mean? Like, that's a lot. It's a lot.
Well, also, before we go into the next topic, you know, kind of echoing what you're saying, also, I mean, and I guess you do it because, you know, you want it to be known publicly what's going on, but the Donna storyline kind of got overshadowed by the Sky storyline, but it's like, yo, like this
Donna dude, shit is mad real.
Yo, it's mad real. This dude's literally threatening her life from prison. He got dudes on the street looking for her, like following her, knowing that she's who she's doing, who she's dealing with. Like, yo, like she, you know, she talks about the crazy, you know, physical abuse that he did towards her, and he's coming home basically like I'm a whip your ass again. Like it's scary, man. It's not a joke, you know.
Right. The other thing I want to mention is how they're still using Duchess as part of Caesar's storyline, but even like the interview was in Duchess's shop. They had this supposed singing telegram that came from Duchess. They're talking about Duchess's song, but Duchess ain't nowhere to be found. I think that's kind of corny.
What? I mean, you think she's going to make an appearance during the season?
It doesn't seem like it, but I just think it's weird to have her name all up and through this first episode and there's no Duchess. Like, to me, that's kind of cheating, I guess.
It's hanging over the whole show, you know?
Yeah. I want to touch on Real House. I don't know if you saw. I want to touch on Real Housewives.
Yeah, yeah, I watched it.
I don't really think we've gotten into it this season yet. Okay. I don't think.
Well, I think we mentioned it maybe the first episode, but not really go heavy.
Right. So the girls are on one of their, you know, one of their season, you know, excursions. You know, girls' trips to San Francisco. Margo's back around for some reason that I don't understand. Yeah. So it's Nene, it's everybody except Kim, basically.
Yeah.
And Nene and Portia are going at it. And Nene's probably like, because Portia's mad that Nene was on Watch What Happens Live a while ago, last season, during the midst of the candy bullshit. And a caller called in and said, who do you think needs to leave the show? And Nene said, freaking Fraud, immediately, meaning mm-hmm. Portia and Phaedra. Mm-hmm. And she was like, they declassed the show. So Portia's on this thing like, you tried to get me fired from the show, which is absolutely not what happened. I mean, in this, and Nene double talks a lot, but in this case, Nene is right. She didn't go to Andy, and she has gone to Andy before and been like, fire this chick. She did not go to Andy and say, fire this chick. Somebody asked her a question. She was like, this is my answer. And so, but Portia's like, you had this whole smear campaign against me. You tried to get me fired. You messing with my money. And it just wasn't that serious. But Nene was like, yo, when are you going to take some accountability for your shit, though? Yeah. Like, there were no ramifications against you for your part in what happened to Candy. I
haven't really apologized.
Yeah, you haven't really apologized. Like, you're trying to act like everything's all good and, you know, keep throwing shit back at people. So I guess this was finally the moment where Portia was like, all right, you know what? Let me actually apologize to Candy. Let me actually take some responsibility. Because Portia has, she's been skipping around and shit all season. Like, mm-hmm. has not, like, admitted out the gate, I haven't talked to Candy.
But basically on some, like, you still mad about that? Kind of like.
Yeah, like, no, me and Candy are cool. No, y'all not cool because you ain't said shit to her. Like, she just trying not to, she just has to be around you to film. Like, that's it. You know what I mean? It's just, and I don't know what part of Portia thought it was cool that, like, she was just going to act like that shit ain't happened. Like, no, you absolutely owe Candy an apology because you ain't apologized when it happened at the show. You have said, like, you could have really just called her and be like, you know what? My bad, girl. You know, that was crazy. I'm sorry. But yeah, like, but Portia been trying to act like, oh, I'm, you know, she all holistic and vegan and you know, light and love and whatever. But in this case, you know, as hard as Nene can go and be wrong sometimes, this time she's absolutely right. And then, of course, everybody's kind of on Kenya because her shit with her husband is so strange. You know, like, he's not around. He clearly doesn't want
to
take.
She didn't introduce nobody to him.
She didn't introduce anybody to him, not even Cynthia. Mm-hmm. He clearly doesn't want to tape. He ain't going to be on tape. I would be very surprised if he showed up on the show ever. Yeah. So we see them on the phone. We hear her mention him, but we don't see them together. We don't hear her say, oh, he just left. Oh, he's coming tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah. But we do hear, he doesn't like me to wear makeup. He might not want me to do this. He might want me to do that. Da, da, da. So the girls are really kind of like, you know, side-eyeing it a little bit.
Yeah.
What I didn't like, though, is that Kenya left to go to very...
her grandmother.
Her grandmother raised her. She's very emotional about it. And as soon as she left, they started talking about her.
Right.
About the marriage thing. And again, I get they have concerns, but it just felt like, yo, as soon as she was out the room, they just started going in. I said, Cynthia got really upset and was like, yo, I'm not going to sit here while y'all talk about, you know, Kenya. She's not here. Like, I don't like that negative energy. And I agreed with Cynthia on that note. I was like, yo, she's with the Brea grandmother, man. Like, give her a little rest, man. Like,
right.
Like, it felt like, just like, oh, she's gone, girl. Let's talk about this and that. And then trying to turn Cynthia on her, too. Like, she didn't even invite you. That, you know.
And let me just say, she didn't even have to leave to go bury her grandmother for that to be fucked up. It was just unnecessary. Like, why is Kenya's marriage and her business so pressing for y'all? Like, that shit is fascinating.
But you know what? I will say this. Turnabout is fair motherfucking play. And Kenya used to be the first motherfucker to get in everybody's shit about their marriage. The first motherfucker. And stay in it. And question niggas on it. And poke at it. And do whatever. So guess what, bitch? You had that coming. That part, I'm actually not mad at. Because I'm not saying this right. But I understand.
I'm saying it seems pressing because she's not really... It's like a one-way fight, is my point.
Because she's not opening up.
She's not engaging at all about it, and they keep pressing on it. And I gotta say, man, for somebody that, you know, you guys are my friends, or, you know, look, man, if I go to send my grandma, that's my mom, like, to the upper room, okay, I'm gonna need one of you motherfuckers to get on a plane, okay, and come with me. If we friends like that.
If we rocking like
fuck,
that.
Fuck sipping wine on the rooftop.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we moving like that, then let's do it.
I guess not everybody is your friend like that. And I'm not saying, but like, come on, man. Somebody jump on the plane for a day.
Right.
For a day.
And I also think like, she's probably like, hey, man, right there wrongly. She's like, hey, I seen what happened with everybody else's marriage on this show. And I'm not even trying to put mine on this show to expose it to the quote unquote reality show curse, you know?
I think she probably would. I just think he don't want to.
Yeah,
he has no problem putting her relationship on Front Street. That nigga ain't trying to do that shit.
Yeah, he probably gave her the talk like, look, man, this is only gonna happen if I'm not with this shit here. So if us getting married means I gotta do that, then we can stop this today.
Right. But I will say, now that she has a man to focus on, like an actual man to focus on, she is staying out of everybody else's business to a much larger extent.
Yeah, yeah. Do you,
in a real way.
Have you been out to that? He owns a restaurant in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, I can't remember if I've been there before or not. I think maybe it's Soko. I think I have, but I can't really.
Oh, that's a popular one.
I want to say it's the restaurant
that Chef Robles
at, I think.
Okay, yeah, so if he owns Soko, then he's doing well. That's a very popular restaurant out there, so.
They ain't got no greens, though.
Nah, I think it's a little. I think it's a little.
It's bougie. It's probably, I think it's like a soul Caribbean.
Yeah, shit. It probably got vegan dishes and cook everything in coconut oil.
Yeah, I'm good on that.
Yeah, on all that shit.
God bless.
Wait, let's talk a little bit real quick about Married to the Medicines. So they went to New Orleans for their annual. And the storyline was Mariah coming back to the show on this episode. Toya allegedly brought her back without anybody knowing. And that turned into
So I'll be honest.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is she going to be back when they go back to Atlanta? Or
right,
she's
that's my question. Trip?
I don't know.
I'll be honest, I watched last week's. I started watching this week's, but it started with a bunch of yappy yap, what's homegirl's name that calls Contessa Contessa?
Heavenly.
I can't take but so much of Heavenly. And this started with a whole lot of Heavenly. And I was like, all right, I'll come back to this later.
Heavenly's a mess. Heavenly talks just like one of my aunts. I think Heavenly's from Alabama. And she talks one of my aunts. Like, they, it's the same pattern. It's that same. She sounds like my Aunt May.
Mm-hmm. She sounds just like an Aunt May. And you got to tune them out. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, she's showing my mate from Alabama. It's just a trip, man. I mean, this episode, we didn't get a lot. We got a little bit of marriage stuff as far as Quad goes, and it looks like we're going to get explosive.
Everybody gets divorced on this goddamn show.
Yeah, it looks like next week, Quad and Greg just go ham on each other. As wild as Heavenly is, I didn't think she was really wrong this time with her and Contessa. As far as when she was trying to talk to Quad, because she basically was like, yo, we have a background and a history of talking about this. You know, like, I'm not just bringing it up out the blue. And Contessa was trying to, kind of protect Quad, which is noble, but it was kind of weird because, you don't really know what the history of it is, you know?
Yeah.
Was Heavenly trying to talk to Quad about Greg and Contessa was trying to shut it down?
Yes.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, she was trying. She said, Heavenly said, because Quad mentioned that, I see her and Greg having a lot of issues. And Heavenly said, well, I think a lot of the issues that you're having are probably deeply rooted in the fact that you told Greg you would have children and you're constantly, you're not having children. And you every year you come up with another reason not to have children. He's probably very resentful. I mean, she might not have said it as clean as that, but that's basically what she said.
No, that's what I was getting ready to say. She didn't say it as clean as that. No. And Heavenly has a way of...
Way about her.
She has a way of speaking to people in a fucked up way under the guise of, I just keep it real.
Yeah, I'm just honest.
I'm just honest. Like, no, you're not. You were fucking being... She's just, to me, she's just a mean-spirited person. Like, she's a mean usher. Like, if I had to...
Oh, absolutely.
She's an absolute mean usher who pinches the kids when they try and get a little peppermint in the back pew.
And won't give you an extra program.
Exactly. And none.
Can I get an extra program? No, ain't no more left.
So dang, that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of what she does. And I mean, she's a lot to handle on camera. I have to admit, she, you know, and watching the show, I kind of cringe a little bit when she's on camera. Like, she's just a lot. And
you know what's interesting about this show to me, and now I think you'll get this, is like, initially, for me, of course, like everybody, it was about medicine and them being doctors or dentists or being married to a doctor. But except for Toya, because she's from Detroit, now how I look at this show is, to me, this show is about Southern Black women who, for the most part, went to Black schools and, like, the lives that they kind of lead now, kind of being in that still kind of HBCU-ish kind of cloud and, you know, sororities and fraternities. And, like, I look at it more like that than about medicine in and of itself.
Well, I actually think it's just about Black married women at this point, because the difference between this show and some of the Housewives shows is that by the time we're in our second or third season, we usually end up damn near with more single women than actual married women. Mm-hmm. And in this show, with the exception now of homegirl who, why is her name escaping me? Whose husband just cheated.
Jackie.
Yeah. With Jackie, everybody's still in their marriage. And so I think this is one of the first times that we're seeing like an actual show that really still ends up being about like what's happening in your marriage. How are you navigating your family and this lifestyle and the things that all these shows were set out to be about? This one actually is still about, at least right now, until all these motherfuckers end up getting divorced because they all fighting out.
I think Quad and Greg have been married 5 years, but I think most of the other, maybe, I don't know how long Toya, but most of them have been double digit marriages as well. So they've been married for like a while. You know what I'm saying? Like this,
right.
They've been married for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. but I look at it from a different prism than I did when I first started. Because when it first started, it definitely was about, oh, we're the doctors and we're the upper echelon of Atlanta. Especially when they had the white woman on there, Carrie. It was kind of like that. But now, like I said, I look at it as like, yeah, now I look at it as more like these are just, like you said, Southern Black women who have been married a long time and trying to figure it out, you know, try to keep
And
it.
I also don't think there's as much, they're all really extra in their own way, but I don't feel like there's as much keeping up with the Joneses as there is on the Housewives franchise. As much like, let me floss right quick as there is in the Housewives franchise. I think, you know, it's fine for them to show that they're comfortable and they're doing some things and whatever, but they ain't even out here like Karen renting out a yacht. You know what I mean? Like that type of shit, you know? Karen.
Karen's not.
Karen about to drive Ray into the grave.
I think it's been very interesting, though, to watch this because I don't think we've ever seen married couples interact with such significant issues in this way on camera. I said that like last week, you know, like they're really addressing some serious shit here.
Serious shit.
Like real cheating, my nigga. Like real.
Yeah.
Like not you looked at her like my nigga. Like real shit
that she was legit blindsided by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Or even Simone and Cecil, like it's not cheating, but it's dealing with yo. Like we really don't get along. Now these kids is leaving the house, and I don't even know if I even like you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know what? I can tell you from, you know, having conversations with married men. You know, when I have my trips or whatever, and we, you know, have these sorts of conversations, like. That comes up, man. Like it is vitally important that you still stay connected to your wife outside of your children, because they're gonna leave.
Yep.
And you're gonna look up, and you're gonna be a surly, resentful, angry motherfucker in a house with somebody who's also surly, resentful, and angry. And now y'all surly, resentful, and angry at motherfucker 57.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So now what?
And now what?
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's interesting to see how this plays out. And I'm not even saying that in some, oh, I hope this all happens, you know, ends with fairy tale endings, because, you know, life doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. Right. But I do hope that they get some sort of closure from doing this, because they've literally exposed massive parts of their lives.
Yeah.
On television, dude.
Yeah.
This is not cackling shit. This is real. Like I don't, can Quad have children? Is that something that's going to, you know, I don't even know if I should even be saying that, but like, is that something that's going to come out on the show?
Yeah.
As to why she keeps sort of maybe making excuses. Is there something, you know, wrong, you know, that she doesn't really want to express, she's been holding in, right? Mm-hmm. How does that work? You know, so it's interesting, man. It's definitely a show that I watch, and I'm more, honestly, man, when Heavenly's not on the screen, I'm far more engaged in the show.
Heavenly is a lot. She's a lot. She's a lot. Yeah.
I want to shit. Okay, I want to talk about the Ball Brothers.
Y'all lift Mr. Jeffrey in prayer. Y'all pray over.
Yeah, lift me up.
He needs some blessed Earls.
Bless the Earls.
Where Miss Janice in the building? Tell him go get
Deacon Jackson $20 one in prayer club. So the Vibe Ball, Lonzo Ball, listen, LaMelo and LiAngelo are the Ball
family. LiAngelo.
LiAngelo. They're the Ball family.
This nigga said LiAngelo.
Whatever his name is. Shit. LiAngelo, is it Melo, Jello, shit. I don't know what the name is. Do they make Jello anymore? I ain't had Jello in years, by the way.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
I had Jello and yeah, I just got a little it's Jello.
It's a low calorie snack. You should indulge.
That's what yeah, they do, Mama.
Really put little fruit man on
pineapples.
That.
Yeah, get you that good fruit cocktail.
And then the
Jello salad. I was talking about that shit.
Yeah, Jello salad.
Kelly was talking trash. That shit good than a mug. Shit.
We used to. I know we sidetracked it. We used to eat that fruit cocktail. That shit be having about 78 grams of sugar in that motherfucker.
Man, there's so many calories in that shit.
You thinking you eating healthy?
Nigga, this is all heavy syrup.
All syrup. Just killing. Shit, I ain't had Jello in years. So what came up this week that after all the whole China thing and everything, that LaVar Ball has taken his two youngest kids out of school. One, the youngest one, is only 16, and has now signed them with an agent where they will be playing basketball in, like, basically, like the D League.
Right. Well, let's first say that he took the UCLA student out. UCLA, yeah. USC, ready for UCLA?
UCLA.
He took him out because UCLA rightfully suspended him
for stealing. And let's talk about, not to cut you off, but just talk about that story real quick, because I think a lot of people don't really understand or don't have all the facts of what happened in China. So what happened was they went over there to play ball. We know that, right? Apparently he did try to buy something with his credit card. His credit card was declined because I guess, you know, maybe it just doesn't work in China because of whatever. So he was the one who decided to steal. And the other boys definitely stole.
He tried to say it was the other boys.
Yes. And he definitely stole. The other boys definitely stole too. But he stole from three different stores. See, people think he just stole. People think he just stole from the Louis store. He stole from three different stores. The other boys stole from one store. I'm not trying to say that's better or worse. But he was really the ringleader because, again, he's a spoiled kid. He's got this credit card. It didn't work. He's like, well, I'm going to just take it anyway. So I just want to put that out there. Like, he was really, really in the wrong.
Right. But also, if they had gone to fucking Des Moines, Iowa as a team and he shoplifted, he would have been rightfully suspended. Like, when you are an athlete and you travel as part of a team, you are supposed to be representing your team. So that means sportsmanship, code of conduct, all of that shit applies. But especially when you leave the goddamn country as a representative of your school and your team, right?
Yep.
And you're there for the express purpose of playing for your team. of course he fucking got suspended. And LeVar was like, they shouldn't have suspended him because it wasn't that big a deal. And apparently, allegedly threatened the coach, like, well, if you're gonna bench him and suspend him, I'm gonna pull him out of school. And the coach was like, or I'm gonna pull him off the team. And the coach was like, well, okay. But at the time, at least as of last week, I guess he has now, he hadn't actually formally deregistered him from UCLA yet, but I guess mm-hmm. maybe they have now, they're or he's just now, not yeah. gonna pay. Whatever. So, but my thing is, first of all, you are doing your son a horrible disservice in showing him what leadership and sportsmanship is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you absolutely have to be accountable for that. That absolutely was a big deal. It caused a fucking international incident. If the president is tweeting about my kid, regardless of what the fuck, if the president yeah. is tweeting about my kid, my nigga, sit your ass down.
Yep.
Somewhere, please.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's unacceptable that he's like, oh, nah, we're going to pull you out of school. And then it's not, cause like now you're teaching your kid who by many arguments, maybe ain't even that good. The nigga wasn't even set to start. Like, you're teaching him that he could just get away with whatever.
Yep. Yeah. No consequences. So he pulls both the kids out of school. The youngest kid was only going into his junior year of high school. So he pulls him out of school because the coach on his high school team told LeVar, look, he's not going to be coming down to shooting the ball 50, 60 times a game. It's a team sport. Other kids here to play too. You're not here to serve your son. So he pulls, not only does he pull him off the team, he pulls him out of high school. Then he signs these two kids with an agent. So that means their college eligibility is gone. They cannot play college ball anymore. So now you got a kid who's going to his 11th year of high school. He's not even in school, and he can't play college ball. So he sent him over to Lithuania to like the double, triple D league. Apparently,
for a 1-year contract.
Yeah, where they apparently don't speak English, and it's like a town of 10,000 people. Also, what people I don't think people understand is now for the youngest son to even try to go to the pros, he has to sit out now for 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah, because why? Because he's not even out of high school yet.
Oh, right, right, right. 2 years right.
of high school and 1 year of college. So he won't even be able to try out for NBA team until 2021.
So he's 19. Yeah, you have to be 1 year removed from your high school graduating class.
Yes.
I bet that little nigga don't even want to play basketball.
I don't know how he's gonna make the NBA. This guy is just destroying his kids' lives, and people are like
destroying. Like,
yeah.
No, when his kids get grown and yeah. really get some perspective, oh my god, they're gonna hate this nigga.
Yo,
this is so short sighted. It's so short sighted. Like, I don't even understand.
I'm not even so much as mad that he would have taken, or the fact that he maybe thought that going overseas was an option. Look, you know, the NCAA has a lot of shit with them. So I don't feel any remorse on.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's a horrible organization.
But I think that, you know, look, I don't follow college hoops as closely as I used to, but the kid was ranked 226th in his high school class. 220. That means there were 225 better high school players than him.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly honest, I don't even know. He wasn't even really going to play at UCLA.
No, not really. He's going to probably be eighth man or something like that.
Yeah, he wasn't going to get a lot of burn. And everyone said, they were like, yo, you know, this kid is a 4-year college guy. He's not going to be, you know,
coming out, going into the league.
Yeah, he's not explosive. He's not equipped. He's not ready. He's not nearly, you know, he's not nearly ready for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, LeVar has put in his mind that he is going to do something. And the fact that Lonzo has made it to the Lakers, albeit he's struggling a little more than even expected, you know, he is operating with this manifest, you know, I'm going to manifest this shit, and I'm going to make this shit happen, and I'm going to will this shit to happen. And he says we so often, it's almost as though that, like, when he said, we pulled LiAngelo out. I'm like, why? How? I mean, he's an adult. Like technically, you don't have to go pull him out of school.
Right.
Right? Like, that's just weird to, like, the language just shows me, even the interviews, that, you know, he just overtalks everyone.
Yeah.
He's a sideshow.
It's his show. Barker. It's his show. This is all about him.
Yeah, he's all about him. Barker. You know, even with this whole pop-up shop thing, and they show you these folks that are out there, and I'm like, those sneakers were supposedly shipped out on the 24th of November. I have not seen one post of anybody
got their shoes.
Wearing those shoes.
Nope.
Nobody. I have not seen one solitary person put up their kicks and say, yo, I got my kicks.
Yo, so, this dude, yeah, he's, I mean, like I said, I agree with you. Nah, they're going to look up in a couple years because, you know, when the middle kid ain't playing at all, and I don't think the youngest kid, they're going to make it now either. And they're going to look at it and like, yo, you ruined our lives. We have
when your contract is up, like, yeah. They haven't even, like, these kids. So, the thing about international ball is, like, for me, playing overseas first came on my radar when I first moved back to New York, and people were talking about all the kids who used to be really big at the Rucker who didn't make it to the pros but went overseas, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, these kids haven't even had, like, they haven't had that kind of AAU play or circuit play or tournament play. They haven't had any of that. They haven't done any of that.
Plus, they're going to play with grown, like this kid's 15, 16. Dude, they're going to play with grown men, 30-year-old men. Like, they're not going to be over there, like, you know, doing no harm. They're going to be putting these boys on their ass. It's going to be a bad situation, man.
I mean, listen, I wish them well. Like I've always said, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about everything. I hope that Big Baller Brand becomes a $70 billion company that competes with Nike. I hope that these kids go on to play in all-star games and live fruitful lives.
Yep.
Do I think I'm, you know, I don't know that I'm going to be wrong, though.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think I'm going to be wrong at all.
God bless him.
I want to mention this race down in Alabama for the state Senate. Judge Roy Moore versus Doug Jones. I mean,
well, as the polls are coming in, it looks like what about 40% of the precincts reporting, it's like Moore 55, Jones 48 or something like that.
Okay, so it's still kind of close, but it, you know, but it looks like Moore's ahead right now, which I'm not surprised about. It's just like,
yeah, I'd actually be surprised if Moore did not win, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I am at least happy that he's getting a real legitimate run for his money, which and by all accounts, Doug Jones was a strong candidate out the gate. You know, it wasn't just, and Roy Moore was a poor candidate out the gate. Like, the man has been pulled, like, he was actually pulled off the off of the Supreme Court, the state Supreme
twice.
Court. You know, twice. So it was already like a race that should have been, for all moral and decent reasons, and the Democrats, you know, with a strong stance, of course, it's Alabama, these motherfuckers will vote party over anything. But there are a lot of people who finally decided that they had to make a call, not so much Moore or Jones, but just like, I'm not going to vote Moore, just period. Like, I just may not vote. And Black folks came out to the point that there's all kinds of rampant reports of all kinds of trickery and foolery and suppression at the polls. So they are getting a run for their money right now. And that makes me happy. Like, ideally Moore will lose, but even if Moore wins, this is a lot closer than probably any race that they've seen in Alabama for a minute.
I mean, it's just bigger than this race in and of itself is what's showing is just like, you know, it's kind of like this version of white establishment, you know, is definitely like on their last legs. These old white men, because everybody's old, and everybody they talk to on TV is old.
Yeah.
Everybody's like 65, 75, 80 years old. Everybody's old. These guys are on their last legs, and they literally are doing anything that they can do to try to keep the last little bit of power.
That's it. That's all they care about, and they don't give a fuck. And that's the thing.
That's what Democrats need to learn.
Yeah, the only thing that makes me happy about all the bullshit we've been seeing over the past couple of months is that this is the destruction of the GOP as we know. Like, it's a wrap. Like, these motherfuckers can't claim the Family Values Party anymore. They cannot stand on the moral high ground anymore. They can't even claim to be the party of Christian values anymore because they have shown that they don't give a fuck as long as they get their shit. But to that same point, Democrats got to get some fight in them because we always try to be fair and... Yeah, we always gotta be fair with shit, and we don't have a plan even for 18 yet. We gotta get a fucking plan together.
Yeah, they're just like, the Democrats are just like, come on, man, that's not right. But Republicans are moving forward.
Listen, Republicans are packing the state Supreme Court. They're fucking with gerrymandering.
Yep.
They're pushing this fucking tax bill through. We're about to repeal net neutrality. That's going to be a goddamn disaster. Yep. Like, they're fucking everything up, and they're just steamrolling with it. Like, they're just gone with it.
And they're going to walk out, like, if they do lose 18 and 20, they're going to walk out, it's going to be such a mess, they're going to be like, hey, now you guys fix it. And if the Democrats
and it's going to fall on us. Yeah, and then they're going to blame us for all of
it. And they're going to be like, hey, y'all couldn't fix it. Y'all might as well let us back in. It's just, it's a big game. What you think, bro?
I don't really give a fuck about none of them folks down there, man.
Yeah.
To be honest. Like, I just don't, like, I said it before in the show, like, I'm so drained and I'm so fucking indifferent right now about this shit. Like, I just can't, I don't even really get riled up. I mean, Moore's a piece of shit. You know, I don't know who Jones is. Jones might be a piece of shit, too. I mean, what, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Jones, as a prosecutor, was the person who convicted the guy who killed the
four little girls.
The four little girls in the church. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the other thing that's kind of happening to watch out for right now is that people are assembling some of the Trump sexual assault accusers to come back forward. To try to put some pressure on him. At this point, I really don't think anything fucking matters. I don't think anything matters. I think Trump could stand up at a podium and be like, I was fucking with the Russians. I think they rape me. I literally don't think anything matters, which is really scary. It's really fucking scary. But they're trying to, in light of the current climate and environment, really turn the heat up on this dude. But the thing about Trump is you cannot embarrassing Trump does the opposite of what you expected it to. Most of the time you think if you shame a public figure, they'll step down, they'll fall back, they do whatever. With Trump, it puts a battery in his back. Yeah. And all he's going to do is fight. So even if this motherfucker is over all of this shit, actually doing this might make him hold on tighter. Yeah. Just because.
What you really got to do with him is ignore him.
You gotta absolutely ignore him.
If you ignore him, that's what drives him insane.
None of this shit gonna change till somebody ass get them silver bracelets put on them. And until somebody get hit with motherfucking 30 years for some treason or some shit like that, none of this is gonna stop.
That's real. I wanna did you keep up with the thing that happened with the NFL Network?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I read an article on it today.
Yeah, so go on and jump it off real quick.
Okay, yeah. So the NFL Network actually suspended three
people. A lot of people, right?
They suspended three people, and ESPN suspended two people. So the players were NFL Network suspended Marshall Faulk, Hall of Fame running back. Mm-hmm. Keith Evans, who actually used to play for my Saints, he was a journeyman halfback. And Ike Taylor.
Begin this half hour of new fallout from the Me Too movement.
And then ESPN suspended Donovan McNabb and Eric Davis. And
Eric Davis out there too.
I'm sorry. No, let me rephrase that. Jamie Cantor was a stylist who worked for the NFL Network.
Yeah. Yep.
She was basically being harassed and, she had, there was a whole ton of sexual misconduct, naked pictures, videos, all sorts of inappropriate gestures.
Yeah, they're sending dick pics. Like, nigga, what are you doing?
She said in one particular graphic instance that, you know, basically Marshall Faulk dropped his pants and was stroking himself.
Nigga, what are you doing? Yeah. Nigga, like, you have the job, my nigga. Like, what are we doing here?
So also in her suit,
Ike Taylor was the other guy, by the way.
Yes, so. Ike Taylor. She named Donovan McNabb. She named Eric Davis. They were suspended by ESPN, but she also named Fred Weinberger, who used to be at NFL Network, but is now the head of The Ringer, which is Bill Simmons.
Eric Weinberger. Eric Weinberger, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's pretty graphic. It's pretty detailed. She states that these were text messages. She had been at this place for 10 years. She worked there from 2006 to 2016. I've read two articles. One says she was fired. One says she was dismissed. I don't know exactly what that means, right? Like, was she fired because she wasn't doing her job? Was she fired because
she laid off? HR?
Or was she fired because she took the shit to HR and they got pissed? Mm-hmm. Because usually people that have that kind of time at a job don't really just get fired like that. Like that, they usually try and figure something out, you know, when you've been there for a decade. This shit is about to hit the fan. It sounded very locker room. It sounded very, she mentioned that, there was some inappropriate stuff with Warren Sapp, who's had a history of this.
Warren Sapp, and he was right. Eric Davis is named as well.
Yeah.
And this probably means it's sports turn up to bat. And this is going to be interesting to watch because as much as media and entertainment have this kind of there is no line culture, sports is a whole nother world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to see what follows this.
I'm also just like, this is what I'm just, this was blowing me, is blowing my mind. First of all, like, okay, there's four or five people named in this suit. And they all going after the same woman. I'm like, what's going on? Like, why y'all keep going after this woman in particular?
It was because she's their stylist and because she had to be around them when they were changing clothes and because it was something to do. That shit wasn't deliberate, like, I'm seeking her out. It was convenient. They probably did it to a bunch of other women in their orbit as well.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing I don't get is, like, I've never been a professional athlete, and I know they're afforded a lot of luxuries, the women throwing themselves at them all the time, and so I got a different mindset, but, like, I just can't imagine going to the job and, like, just, like, pulling some chick in my office and, like, just, you know, pulling my joint out. Like, what are you, my nigga, like, what are you
doing? Yeah, it's a certain level of entitlement. And that's really what all of this is about. Everything with sexual assault is about entitlement. It's about entitlement and it's about a power play. And it's about I should be able to do whatever the fuck I want to do because I'm
and I think that because it's the NFL Network and because these are former players, there is a certain bond and there's a certain connection that they have, you know, and they feel like they can do what it. To me, it sounds like they made that office and that workspace an extension of their former workspace, which was a locker room, and they just transferred that same energy into that workspace. I don't know, you know, I from what I can read, it wasn't all that specific in terms of dates. I don't know if this is something that she tolerated you know, the whole time. I'm not quite sure. I know she names these guys specifically. I know that I think they might have only been around and been on that and been on NFL Network for a few years, not justifying it or saying anything like that. But you know, this could have been very well an ongoing thing with her. And again, like Nas said, this is one of those instances where it's a very intimate setting, right? Like, you know, your stylist might have to take you in scene. Right? Like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or your stylist sit there and, you know, literally just your stylist may have to be in the room with you while you're changing clothes and see you in your underwear and see you. It's kind of like how female reporters in the locker room, right? Like you have to I see niggas with their shit out. So yeah, you kind of have to. You have to actually make a certain amount of undress. You have to kind of inoculate yourself to it because it's what you have to be around. Like if I'm in a room with one of my artists and they're getting undressed, I'm really not tripping because I'm not. It's whatever. You know what I mean? Like they're changing.
You're not looking at them like that, you know.
Yeah, but you know, if you're an athlete, if you're a jock, there might be some instinct in you, like just from the day to be like, yo, there's a chick around. Let me put on a show. And these dudes are probably also thinking, I wouldn't be surprised if these men even now are like, she's tripping off of that. I ain't even mean. You know what I mean? Like I ain't even mean nothing by that shit. Yeah. It's whatever.
Video, big deal, you know.
Yeah,
shit, wild, man. So I salute y'all. So we'll keep an eye on that. I wanted to end the show talking about Keaton Jones.
This is a mess.
This is a disaster.
Fucking mess.
So he's this, how old is he? He's in sixth grade. I guess about 11.
Middle school. So that's about 11, yeah.
11 to 12. Our kid, he's a video posted by his mom a few days ago. Really disturbing video because it looks like Keenan might have he looks like a kid that could possibly have a learning disability.
Yeah, he also looks like he has like partial dentures or something. It's weird.
Yeah, and scars on the side of his head looks like he's had surgeries maybe when he was younger. So he's posted a video about these kids really even bullying him in school, pouring milk on him and bullying him and just treating him horribly. And he's, you know, obviously very disturbed in the video, crying, shaking, just. You know, like, I don't understand why people do this to people, to other kids. It's not right, you know. Very touching video. Video hits the internet, goes crazy. Everybody offering this kid money and athletes offering
him encouragement.
Yeah, encouragement. Athletes offering to come to school, offering him to come to the games. Just, you know, as and all in a really beautiful way. Then a couple of days later, it comes out that his mom is kind of like basically like a card-carrying racist, alt-right person. They got pictures to pose with him and his family and some friends with the Confederate flag. There's some old texts and stuff from his mom, you know, old Facebook postings, basically doing, you know, talking about alt-right shit. And so it really goes crazy. So then, of course, Twitter gets a hold of it even more and starts to basically say, like, we should have done our homework first. But then, you know, I really hit a space. I didn't know what to think because even if that's his mom getting down like that, and she definitely is, I don't know if he gets down like he's a child.
Well, that's the thing. So there is a story, and I don't know if it's been supported or not, that what he was talking about in terms of being bullied, there's two different things. One was that he was being, I guess kids were getting on him because he was fucking with some black kids. That's one story.
Bothering black kids or hanging out with black kids?
No, like calling them niggas and doing all this other stuff. Oh. And kids were getting on him to get him to stop. And that's what he was saying.
I didn't hear that. Okay.
That's one story, but I haven't really seen it. I don't know what the source was, and I haven't seen it supported. The other thing that somebody pointed to was the fact that he said that kids were making fun of his nose.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, a couple people were like, they was probably calling him nigga nose because he does have a big nose. And that offended him. You know, there's just a couple different things, people picking it apart. My thing is, he is the child. So if his family, you know, if they're raging racists, obviously that's going to be ingrained in him. And he's too young for it to be his responsibility to yet know better and do better if he hasn't had the opportunity to learn that. However, once we get this shit all cleared up, for real, I got some shit to say about his mama, because this is so typical of the white right. And I'm not going to call them the alt-right, but the white hard right. Y'all motherfuckers, like somebody did post a screen grab where she was talking about everybody want to boohoo and cry. If you don't have blood showing, if you ain't got no broken bones, like find a safe space. You know that snowflake shit they try to talk. But as soon as they get what they give, they boohooing, crying, why, woe is me, whatever. So I am side-eyeing the hypocrisy. Like, your kid gets bullied, and you're happy to accept like this fundraising and these accolades and this attention that you're getting. However, obviously your family also, Sean, we can hear you. Your family also like follows a mindset of picking on another class of people. And your son himself is saying people can't help how they're born. They can't help what they do. So everything your kid is saying, if it is really true that you hold these like super conservative and borderline racist and, you know, the South will rise again as ideas, you know, white purity and shit, like you're a hypocrite. You're just a hypocrite, plain and simple.
And you go through a money grab because apparently an MMA guy called, tried to get him to come out, and she was like, nah, we don't.
Joe Schilling.
Yeah, we just want the bread.
Joe Schilling was the MMA guy, and he reached out. He reached out and was saying, "Hey, you know, I'd like to, you know, have him come out to one of the fights, one of the matches, or whatever. You know, my treat, my dime." And the back and forth exchange was, "Hey, you know, I really just need you to like retweet and co-sign this GoFundMe." Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is that the GoFundMe was started by someone else.
Oh,
someone named Joseph Lamb from New Jersey, which that's the person that started the GoFundMe.
He started it first because he felt bad for the kid. Apparently, she also started one later.
They froze her shit, right?
Well, I know the Joseph Lamb one. He cut off donations. He cut off donations and he cut off whatchamacallit.
But I think they froze hers.
Yeah, I still give him a fuck you because he was very on some super apologetic shit about, you know, look, that was a child. Watching that bothered me because, again, it was a child. I don't know that there was any credible story or evidence that came out of Tennessee and from that school that suggested that he was, you know, calling other kids nigga and all of that sort of stuff.
Right.
That was sort of
I haven't seen anything credible
yet. So I'm going by this on face value, right? But I was...
Well, why do they need $50,000?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. Like, aside from all of this, the $58,000, right, that they raise, like, how does that stop his bullying? Like, how does that effectively change anything? Like, it was...
That actually makes it worse, because now the kid's like, oh, you got some money. Give me money, you know, just...
It was also just, you know, I'm a parent, you know, like, money would be the furthest thing from my mind to see my kid in shambles like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know that I would have been in a parking lot with him shaking like that and not in a principal's office flinging shit around.
Yeah, like, what the fuck is really going on?
What the fuck is going on? I just didn't understand how your kid calls you and says he's going to get beat up at lunch, and then you show up, and then you film in the parking lot. So I got questions. I'm not saying that the kid wasn't bullied. I am saying that I don't know that this wasn't premeditated in a way to try and go viral.
Right, because also the mother is...
By her or by him, though?
By her, because the mother is completely calm while asking. Like, it's like she's interviewing him. Like, she's not even trying to trust him.
Yeah, tell me what else he said. Tell me what else he said.
Yeah, she's not even like... But you know that's not true, right? You know you're dope, right? You know, like, she's not even comforting this kid.
No, at all. It felt like a complete money grab when it went viral, right? And that's, I feel like that's what they were banking on. Like,
What do we do in this case when you think the kid is, you know, maybe if he wasn't doing the nigga shit, maybe a decent kid, but his mom is a piece of shit. Like, what do you do? I don't know what to do.
Here's the thing. I think you can still have a conversation about bullying, period, that's not centered on this kid, right? Like, the dialogue should still be had about your kids and bullying, and parents should still be trying to check and see what's going on with their kids and bullying. And we can leave the kid out of it, but, like, the family already, like, Doodle started the GoFundMe. I think one thing that is very important to note here is that we tend to jump on shit that we see on the net immediately, like retweet this, send this, donate this, without doing any research. And again, I'm not saying that that Keenan, whatever his name is at fault here, because he is a child. So for all intents and purposes, he's kind of an innocent. Even if he did whatever they say he did, he's still kind of an innocent because he's a kid. He doesn't know any better yet. But why do they need money? Like, I don't understand. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why is it just like, oh, I felt bad?
That's a very, you know what? Someone tweeted, you know, that question, and someone had a great answer with, it's very American. Right? Like, just
throw money at it. Very American.
Throw money at it. And we don't have any sense of, like, this woman has been on Good Morning America. She did an interview. They have had all of this. They have not partnered with one anti-bullying national campaign. They have not gone to Tennessee's, you know, the Board of Education down there, the local municipality,
we don't have any statement from the school system, none of that shit.
Nothing. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't know that this all, I'm not saying that the kid wasn't bullied, because I know 11-year-olds are cruel, and the kid, him being bullied, yes, that's very believable.
He's funny looking. I totally believe it.
Yes, it's absolutely.
I watched a little bit of the Good Morning America interview, which is the first time I saw him since, you know, outside of that video they posted. And the vibe I get is he's, you know, not, no disrespect or whatever, but that he's a little slow. And he actually is the kid we saw in the video.
Yeah.
He's a sweet kid. I think his mom obviously knows that, and is completely manipulating him. Like, I don't think the kid has any ill will, any ill intentions. And I hate to be this guy, even if he did call some kids nigga, it's foul and it's fucked up. But it's almost like he kind of slow. He probably don't even know no better. He's just doing.
I literally don't believe he knows better. Like, you're a product of your family. If that's what your whole entire family is on,
exactly. Exactly, but his mom is on some, like, yo, we about to get this money, I'm about to get this double wide trailer and this F-150, and we about to be popping here in Tennessee. That's the vibe I got.
That's exactly what I felt, that's exactly what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I mean, the guy who started it, said he would give refunds to Pete, that they would be able to get refunds. Mm-hmm. And for those who wanted their money back, for those who didn't want their money back, that they were going to do some sort of college, $25,000, you know, college fund for him, which again,
but he did already cash out $28,000 of the money raised to them, I heard.
Yeah,
so Joe?
They raised a total of 50 whatever, but he had already cashed out some of the funds to the family.
So yeah, they listen, man. They, you know, I saw that picture. Okay, it looks like it's one of them towns where you get you a brand new house for $48,000.
Exactly.
Okay, so they good.
Everybody got a pickup truck.
That boy, right. God bless him. But let's be fair here. That boy's probably not gonna be going to college.
No, they're gonna burn through that money on them. That money gonna be gone by fucking April. That money's gonna be gone by February.
So I mean, the game is the game. Okay, and people got hustled. And I didn't give anything. I wouldn't have given anything, mostly because, you know, not that I don't care about this kid, but I just didn't really see how money was going to help him at all. And again, like I said, there has been no sort of decisive plan of action on how to fix this bullying situation. He just became the face of bullying, right? And they reaped $60,000 of benefit. And a bunch of sympathy, and who knows what the cost of with the gifts, because he was invited to like Tennessee Titan games and all sorts. Like, he was everywhere, dude. Like, he was everywhere.
Yeah, so the Tennessee, the college, University of Tennessee, they gave him a bunch of shit too. Like, because you know, it's right in it's in the same town, Knoxville. So
anyway, man, maybe
I'm gonna be a sucker for this later, but I feel bad for the kid because I think he's being totally manipulated. I think he's old as an 11-year-old, and who might be a little slow. I'm sure he's totally overwhelmed by everything. Like, I don't even know what's going on, and his mom is sitting back just trying to figure out how to get bread. You know,
I kind of been on a real oh well kick. And I kind of feel like, you know, I'm indifferent. Like, I just don't have the capacity to be empathetic to that family. That boy, for sure. But, you know.
The boy, yeah.
I mean, he, you know, this is, you know, that's his situation. That's his situation. And ain't shit I could do about it from here.
Russell, I'm out in Jersey trying to. I'm out in Jersey tending the mine.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know,
I got my own. I got my own figure. I ain't mad at that though, because you know
and
what?
I'm gonna say it, man. Like also too, because I know it wasn't us that gave 58,000, but I'm just saying, man, I got enough of my own folks.
Yeah,
that I need to keep. You know, not my kin, but my you know,
people,
my black folks, my
clan. Yeah,
I got enough. I only got but so much bandwidth.
Yeah.
Okay. Word. And there's a part where my empathy just sources like, yo, I feel bad for the kid.
Well, ain't nothing I could do.
But you know, look, I mean, you know, the game is the game. I don't know what to tell you. You know?
I feel bad for any kid getting bullied, but shit, a month ago there was national news about a girl whose freshman college roommate was fucking, you know,
putting a toothbrush in her asshole
and fucking rubbing tampons on her book bag and putting sour milk in her fucking coconut oil and all kind of other shit. So I really know. You know what I mean? Like you said, we got our own shit.
Yeah.
Just because she was a rich black girl. Like,
Yeah. So I guess peace to Keaton, you know, fuck you to his mom, and you know, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on the story and see what happens from there, you know?
Yeah.
So
just know whenever you are putting yourself in a position to have a light shined on you, you cannot control where that light shines. Like they're gonna find all your shit.
Everything.
So be ready in advance. Amen. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it, man. We're gonna wrap it up. We're gonna try to get one more in for the new year. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye, y'all.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.